on Planet Radio.
It is February the 27th, 2012, and we are in a brand new studio, and so we're still getting the bugs out of it. And the sound may be a little different. Some people are having streaming problems as well. We're looking into that. Hopefully, if you're listening, well, if you're listening, you've got the stream. And I welcome you to the show tonight. My guest will be coming on in a few minutes. Joe DeTomo will be here. We're going to talk about the cult of the Black Sun and the rising of the Black Sun, because a lot of things that have been woven into what's called the conspiracy realm are now beginning to come true. We're beginning to see the whole thing unravel. And so it's a very interesting time to watch, and most of us are not at the sidelines anymore. Most of us are in the heat of battle. A couple of things I wanted to talk about regarding last week's show with George Kavassalis. And one clarification I want to make straight up front. In the course of the interview, we talked a little bit about the One People's Public Trust. And I may have given the impression that I'm not in favor of this. I've actually followed it for quite a while now, and the information that they're putting out and what they're doing is interesting. I had reservations about it because in the initial work that they were doing, they were using UCC filings. But as I understand it, this week, based on their current information, they're saying it is no longer necessary for anybody to use UCC filings to implement the OPPT procedures. And there are new... there's new paperwork being released. This is actually pretty good work. I've been familiar with UCC process going back into the 90s, following people like Winston Shroud, Victoria Joy, and others. And at that time, a lot of people, well, this was the time of the Montana Freeman, too, so there were a lot of people who went to prison as a result of this. That was my... basic concern about what OPPT was doing, but I think it's valuable work, and I think they spiritually have it pretty much right. So we leave that with you to your discernment. This is not about leaders. This is about you sifting through information. I like to say chew hard, swallow, and throw out the bones. The other side of this was I was contacted by Jason, who is George's producer, on the Dolores Cannon issue. And some of you will notice that George sort of sidestepped that, and well, he should have. That was not a trap. I was simply pointing out to him as part of the interview that Dolores Cannon, in many ways, her information contradicts what George is doing. So we fairly agree on that process. That said, I'm not against Dolores Cannon. I just think some of the information she brings out needs to be weighed and sifted a little bit. Anybody that's telling you that humanity is fleas on the back of Mother Earth is receiving tainted information. So that kind of gets at where it's going. The other thing that's been floating around again is this idea that the internet's going to go down. You've got to remember something about the internet, folks. It was built by them to withstand atomic blasts. Would a solar event take out the internet? Well, it would on at least one hemisphere, perhaps. But the internet has morphed. It's become a tool of the people, too. So you want to keep your thoughts and your intentions directed towards keeping the system going and avoiding catastrophic events as well. Having said all that, I want to bring my guest up. I've been privileged to talk with him a few times at length, and I find this book that he wrote, this is going back to 2010, The Cult of the Black Sun. It's a work of fiction, but it weaves within it what I'll just say is a motherlode of conspiracy theories. And with no more further ado, Joe DeToma, welcome to Off Planet Radio.
Thank you very much, Randy. Glad to be here.
Good to have you on tonight. Tell us a little bit. This book, and you and I have talked a little bit, this book is kind of the product of your own, I guess, kind of coming to the realization that things don't work quite the way we were told, and yet you and I talked about this. We've always known this, but it was like certain events galvanized our understanding. Tell us how the book came about. Tell us how you came to wake up to what was really going on in the system.
Well, I think I was actually born to it, in that I grew up in a household. My father was a member of an organization called the Alhambra, which is like a sect inside the Knights of Columbus. Knights of Columbus is a very connected organization, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. And this is a small part of it. It's so small that most knights have never heard of it. You have to be a fourth degree knight to be in it, and it's a very interesting organization. It's very similar in the setup to Shriners, and while Catholics probably would poo-poo the point that the knights are similar to the Masons, it's, mm-hmm. the setups are similar.
Yes.
The verbiage might be a little different, but I think the belief systems kind of collide a little here and there before they go in and out of each other. He died when I was a young man, but when I was a young boy, I should say. I was 10. And I remember he and his friends talking around the house, and it was about religion. They were religious men. They were very religious. My father once pulled over, and remember, this is back in the 60s. He saw a guy selling Xmas trees. So he pulled over the car. We lived in the Bronx on White Plains Road. And he got out and just berated this guy. He says, it's not Christmas. It's not Xmas. It's Christmas.
Right, right.
And he, you know, very religious, but never stepped foot in a church. I don't ever remember him going to church. He or his friends. Very odd. So their discussions always bordered on hidden type of knowledge, almost like Gnostic knowledge. But, you know, 9 years old, I wasn't grasping at all, but I knew what they were saying in these, like, hurried little conversations was pretty important. So I tried to pay attention. But he died when I was young. I was 10 years old. And what kind of sealed it there for me was he passed away in the morning one day when we were supposed to go to school. It was a work day. And he just died suddenly. So mm-hmm. I was lying in bed with my brother. We all slept in the same room. And a voice came to me. And he said, Joe, you're going to hear that I died. Don't worry, I'm okay. And it was my father's voice.
Wow.
And sure enough, a minute later, my older brother, who was 7 years older, came into the room. He says, guys, I have to tell you something. And I said, are you going to say Dad died? And my brother looked at me and said, how do you know? And he goes, I think he just told me. So a few weeks after that his presence in the house, I could always still feel it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I had another dream. This was an actual dream. I was actually sleeping. And in this dream, we lived in the Bronx on a hill. And I was playing catch with my little brother. This was the part that sealed it for me, where I knew that there has to be something other than this world. That this world was just a pretext to something beyond us. And I'm standing on the hill, and I'm throwing down the hill because I didn't want to chase the ball, so I made my little brother go down the hill. And in the dream, I see a butterfly, a big, beautiful butterfly, come by. He flies off to my right, onto my neighbor's lawn. And I look over, and there's a rabbit on the lawn. And then I hear my father's voice say, Joe, look out, get off the road. I turned around and a car came over the hill and landed right where I was had jumped away from. So about 2 weeks later, I'm playing catch with my little brother. Same exact scenario. Butterfly goes by, little rabbit on the lawn. And I said to myself, this is just like, uh-oh. I jumped out of the way, and I yelled to my brother, Bobby, get off the street. And sure enough, a car came over the crest of the hill, landed right where I would have been standing, and took off down the hill. And my brother and I were, you know, safely out of the way at that point. Those instances told me there's something other than, obviously, there's a spiritual world. Got to be a way to stay halfway connected to this world so that we can... you know, not lose our loved ones, so to speak. And when these things all happen, I lived in that nether world, you know, kind of one foot in and one foot out my whole life. But then I just looked at policies of the government and the way the world was playing out, and I realized it just doesn't work this way. It can't be. It makes no sense. Why are we talking about this? I had an argument just the other day, a discussion with someone the other day about global warming. Mm-hmm. Convinced that there's global warming. And I said, if there's global warming, it's done by the sun. Well, we went back and forth about the sun and blah, blah, blah. Why don't you believe the scientists? I said, let me ask you a question. If the scientists are interested in global warming and not selling carbon credits, which is really what this is all about, is selling carbon credits, so there's another product for Wall Street to get rich on, I said, why don't they do something about it? Why don't we have solar energy? Germany, half of their output of their country is done by solar energy. How come they can do it and we can't? So that ended the argument. So all these little discrepancies, and then when 9/11 happened, that was the end of it. I said, that's it. Something just doesn't fit here. They're trying to tell us buildings fell down, two airplanes knocked down three buildings, fires, and they came straight down into their own footprint. It just made no sense to me. So at that point, I became convinced that it's just another government. And I looked into Operation Paperclip, which is kind of how this book starts out. And I realized, you know, there's merit to this, but being a person with one foot in and one foot out of reality, I just noticed that there's an occult side to this Operation Paperclip. And we found out that in some research and reading books by Jim Morris, great researcher,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I came up with the fact that Germany in the 30s was very advanced. They had TV. I mean, I'm 58. I didn't have TV when I was a kid. And I'm 58 years old. I was born in 1954. So, but Germany, they had TV in the 30s. They had all this technology. And when they asked the scientists in charge, how did you, and these were the scientists we brought over to run NASA, basically.
Right, right, yeah.
How did you come across all of this knowledge? How did you get so advanced so quickly? Their answer was, we had alien technology. We were able to communicate with aliens. So from that point forward, I kind of dedicated a few years of my life to researching that occult side of it and got fascinated by it.
Let me back you up a little bit. Mm-hmm. 9/11, you live in New York. Now, you don't live in New York City proper, but you live close proximity to that.
Right. I'm in Rockland County, which is about 30 minutes north. I was born and raised in New York. But,
mm-hmm. But something felt wrong about 9/11 from the minute it happened.
The actual minute it happened.
It was like instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
People who have watched events know how news breaks. Oddly enough, with 9/11, we had wall-to-wall coverage almost from the very instant.
Exactly.
And my sense of this early on was, before I got to the point, which was, you know, the realization that, oh my God, you know, Alex Jones said it, you know, inside job. What took me a while to get to there,
mm-hmm.
but the sense that something was wrong, something was mysteriously wrong with this event. There was a spiritual weirdness to this.
Yes.
The day before this event happened, I had something occur to me that was what I would call a psychic break. Basically, I felt just grieved. I went off by myself for about an hour and literally at one point wept. I had no idea emotionally what was going on inside of me until that morning. And it wasn't a vision, it was just a sense. It was foreboding, it was a sense of something horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in a way, and I ask people this when I talk about 9/11, I don't talk about it a lot, what their sense is. People who are sensitive can feel spirit, they can feel the ethereal around them, and they know.
Right.
If you felt that.
I felt it that morning. It was, I don't know if you remember that morning.
I remember.
In the Northeast, it was beautiful.
Beautiful day.
I mean, to this day, it was remarkable in its beauty. It was just an outstanding day. And I was going out to work. I had at that point, I owned a delicatessen, and I opened early, like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I just remembered, while I was driving in and opening the store, like, my God, this is a gorgeous day. It's going to be a beautiful day. But something, it was almost too beautiful, you know? It was almost too perfect. Almost like it was staged. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I just said to myself, it's just one of those days that it's either going to be a great day or it's going to be a real shit day.
Yeah.
And then this happened, and I watched the buildings fall straight down. I had two thoughts. Number one was, that's a controlled demolition. And number two was, how many people are going to be affected by this? The people who passed away, yes. But we've never recovered. Our economy's never recovered from that day. So I just stood at it and watched it. And then the second building came down. I was like, my God, these buildings fell straight down. That's got to be impossible. I besides owning a deli at that point, I'm also been a plumbing contractor my whole adult life. In and out of commercial and residential buildings continually. I own my own company, you know. And, did a lot of design work. And I just looked at it and said, it's got to be impossible for two buildings, I don't care how identical they are, to fall exactly the same way. Then when I went home, and the rest of that day was a fog. And I made it home, and then we saw the Building 7 collapse, again, straight on down. And that was it. I said, it's got to be possible. The odds of this are got to be like every grain of sand on every beach in the world is to one.
This was a building that wasn't even hit directly.
Right.
And apparently had very little collateral damage.
Right. And if you've seen the YouTube clips, if you go and look at them, you'll see the collapse. You'll see the penthouse collapse first, and then it starts to all... It's an interior demolition. It has to be. Which begs the question, you can't wire a building the size of Building 7 in a few hours. That's 6 months or years worth of work. So someone knew something was up.
I want to go back for a minute, though, and get your take on this. There was a sequence that went with 9/11. And for me, it began with Waco, Texas, and Kansas City, the federal building in Kansas City.
Right.
And those events felt so wrong. It was so overt. Now, you know, we're going back to Waco, which is the Clinton administration and Janet Reno and what occurred there.
Right.
And the real story came out pretty quick.
Right.
Then Kansas City happened. And again, the information kind of bubbled up. Now, we're in the earliest days of the Internet. This is not yet a major platform. Even in 2001, we did not have YouTube. We did not have social networking. We didn't have blogs. The people had not yet at that point begun to access the power of this mass communication media.
Right.
There was consciousness there.
Right.
There was a sense that people had of no longer really being fully trusting of their government.
Right.
And by 9/11, I think we hit, you know, and it's a cliche term, but I'll use it anyway, the tipping point where enough people went, wow, there are so many things wrong with this picture. And it became the mother load of conspiracy theories.
What I think it did for people my age, in our 50s, our late 50s, we may be the last generation that actually got an education in critical thinking.
Yeah.
When that happened, our critical thinking, for me it did, because all of those events we just talked about, now that you bring it up, and I think about all those events have one thing in common. Waco, Murrah Building, 9/11, all the evidence
of
all those three disasters were immediately discharged, or immediately buried away. If a Cessna airplane goes down and two people break an ankle, they take that plane and they reassemble it and they do everything they can to find out a reason why that plane went down. But 9/11, Waco, Texas, the Murrah Building, immediately they discarded all the
evidence. Everything's bulldozed.
They took the Waco, they took the Murrah Building, the Oklahoma City bombing building, and buried it and capped it with 25 feet of concrete and put a 24-hour guard on it.
Yeah.
So this day, any other crime scene in the world gets investigated. The guy stabs his wife in an argument. They cordon off the building and do all kinds of research. Here, thousands of people were passing or dying, and you bury the building. It just do away with the evidence. So those, when that happens, you know something's up. Because that says, we don't want to know what happened.
And we don't want anyone else to even...
And we don't want anybody else to
know. You know, and I do stand corrected. Somebody in the chat room pointed out, I said Kansas City, it's Oklahoma, the Murrah Building. But I, as we were talking, I was kind of... Because now in my mind, that's like a chain of events that have occurred.
Right.
And going to 9/11, it appears as though what you said was very important with critical thinking. We did learn that. We got that because we came out of the generations before us that still exercised it as a practical matter.
Right.
I also think that if you look now at, and I'm not putting down the newest generations because my children are part of them.
Exactly.
But we're in a change in terms of human consciousness that's kind of transitional. I would say we're post-literate. But at the same time, I would also say that a lot of the kids today just get it. They don't need a lot of the proof and the facts. They already do not trust the system.
Right. Well, there's a part of this that goes back, and I touch on it briefly in the book. It's kind of reminiscent of Carl Jung's theory that there's a mass consciousness. In Princeton University, there's a device, and it's used to monitor the internet. And what it does, it's a generator, and they collect data on the on this generator. On certain days, like the morning of 9/11,
this was
there was a tremendous
random number generator.
Random number generator. There was a tremendous spike on the morning that Princess Diana was killed.
Yes.
That day that Princess Diana, also a tremendous spike before the event. Now, scientists in England did a study a few years ago that said they wanted to see about predictions. And what they said was, our mind actually knows the choice seconds before we enact the choice physically. We consciously know a choice. Picking a color, anything like that. Our mind picks up and knows what it's going to do instinctively almost before we actually do it and before we actually make a conscious decision to do it. It's an unconscious thing. So if this truly exists, then events like what happened to you on 9/11, why you felt that way the day before, how I felt the morning of 9/11. So we didn't feel that alone. Millions of people had these kinds of feelings. And it showed up on this remote generator in Princeton University. There's only been a few instances where they've noticed this spike, and they've always been worldwide events, you know, almost catastrophic type events.
Yeah. But we're talking about here is basically the unified field, the unified consciousness.
Right.
Which, of course, you know, you go back and you look at the early remote viewing research that was done at Stanford Research, and they were using RNGs there. They were using them probabilistically at that point. But one of the interesting stories that came out of SRI was how Ingo Swann was able to walk into a laboratory and begin to actually game the random number generator computer that they had. So there, it's a two-way thing. We are receivers and we are also transmitters in consciousness. And that,
because
that,
we're all in that consciousness, in that stream of consciousness.
Yeah. So the heightening waves of this thing we've been feeling for a long time. You know, time itself, you know.
Time is... we're in the future, in the present, and the past, all in the same second.
Yeah.
So there's really no time.
Right.
So if you were to take that into another, like, passing away, spirit, I don't think a spirit would have any boundaries about time.
No.
They can react instantaneously to something that we haven't even imagined yet, you know? I would think, because they're in a dimension where time doesn't really exist. We made up time. Time was made up.
Exactly. We did make up time. It's our invention.
Right. Time is an invention. They say in the Gnostic teachings and in the mystery school teachings, they say that it was invented by the god of Saturn, the gods who live on Saturn, who in the Greek and Roman gods is... it'll come to me in a second, but a major god in our mythologies. And this god invented time.
Kronos.
Called Kronos, that's why chronology came from.
Mm-hmm.
But
which
his name
which is attached to Saturn.
Right, it's attached to Saturn.
Yeah.
Saturn has a very mysterious test. In the Gnostic religions, the Gnostic Christian religions, they teach that the Antichrist will come from a moon of Saturn called Iapetus.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, in the movie 2001, Space Journey, Space Odyssey.
Exactly.
Stanley Kubrick's original adaptation was, they weren't going to Jupiter.
No,
they were going
Saturn.
To Iapetus.
Yeah, oh, right.
And that was changed. Arthur C. Clarke urged him to change that in the movie, and Arthur C. Clarke, we know, is a high-ranking Mason. And, they lived together in London, and he urged them to change that. He said, "I'll just change that for my Iapetus, make it Jupiter."
George George Kavassalis was here last week, and he talked a little bit about Saturn and his impressions of Saturn having, had numerous contacts with off-world beings and what Saturn really represented, the energies of Saturn. So, it's interesting this comes up again this week. We're talking about it. Saturn and Kronos and these influences that come from these planetary forces and apparently even off-worlders.
Right. Well, that begs the question. That's the whole teachings of these mystery schools that go back to the Sumerian times. Right up through the Egyptians into the Romans and into the modern world.
Went into even the post-Greek Christian culture, right up to the time of the Cathars. While you've brought this subject up, it's interesting because I noted in your book that you deal with the Archons, and this is a pretty deep subject. What are the Archons, and what are they influencing? What is the effect that the Archons have had on humanity?
Well, the theory is going back, and these are from the Gnostic teaching. These are from the Gospels that were hidden they're not in the Bible. But according to these ancient teachings, because they kind of preceded Christianity, the Manichaeans, they also believed in this. And there was, the Manichaeism was the first worldwide religion. Many religions are based on it. A lot of the, even Cathar beliefs were kind of based on it. But anyway, in their teachings, these beings exist. They are other dimensional beings. They cannot physically interact with us, but they can interact with our situation. They can make us feel jealousy, rage, envy, hate, love, sister. And they feed off of these energies like a psychic vampire. Now, in the mystery school teachings, a lot of the mystery school teachings, and even in the Masons, they go through rituals where it's a fake death. The Masons, you were pushed backwards, or someone grabs you, and they, after having been artificially hit over the head with a bat, and all these religions have a similar ceremony, and it is to prepare us for the life after death, because that's when the true struggle begins. In the mystery school teachings, when we leave our body, we're not pure enough to go to be with God. We have to be purged, let's say, of our emotions, our negative emotions. And what they teach is that you can look at beings like the Archons two ways. They're either angels or devils. They're either doing you a favor so you can continue on to be with God, or you're going through this terrible process where they literally rip these sins from your body. And it's interesting is that there's a mechanism in mythology called a soul catcher.
Right.
And this soul catcher is located on the dark side of the moon, according to mythologies. The gods, the Roman and Greek gods, were all the same, just different names, retreated to the dark side of the moon when mankind developed timelines, chronology. We became so entrenched in the everyday now that we lost our spiritual side. With that, we lost ways to communicate with the gods, and they escaped to the moon. Not escaped, but left. They didn't want to be with us. And on the moon is this soul catcher. And I've heard references to it, and I actually was listening to a tape of John Lear talking about it once. John Lear's father, as you may know, he invented the Lear jet. And John Lear was a pilot for the CIA. And he decided to come forward with knowledge about extraterrestrials and, you know, secret government. And he brought up the subject of the soul catcher. So when I heard that, I realized that, you know, there's more to it coming from different sides. When I was researching this book, and I wanted to find something out, almost like it's synchronicity just kicked in. You know, whenever I wanted to think of, find something, I would click to the next page on the computer, and it would be there. So it was almost like it was being handed to me. So I decided to make it into a fiction, because, as Oscar Wilde said, you know, if you're going to tell people the truth, you better make them laugh or they'll kill you. So I decided to make it a fiction, an entertaining type book that people will be able to get into, and also throw in some little hidden knowledge doodads and try to make it like as mundane as possible, just so people might be interested and then go on the computer and look it up for themselves, you know, or grab a book or go to a library, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of research out there, and there's a lot of people who have done deep work. What you did with this book was you put it in a form that was entertaining, and yet at the same time, it brought a lot of information from different time streams, different historical landmarks, into a narrative. And there's embeds in this book I've been surprised scanning back through it. You sent this book to me last year, and I read it then, and I've kind of scanned back over it again. And I was surprised at how much I found going through it the second time that I didn't see the first time.
Right.
And for some people to read a lot of factual, detailed research is very painful, and whereas putting it in a fictional backdrop not only makes it entertaining, but it brings it into a reality stream where it's like watching a movie or TV. The mind relaxes enough to begin to absorb the information.
Right. Right. You see, there's a wall that people have in their mind. Recently, psychologists have come up with the term cognitive dissonance. And what it means is, you can show somebody evidence. You can say, this is why this happened. And if the point you're trying to make is something that's going to require them to rethink everything they know, then they're not going to think it. It's better for them to protect their mind than to delve into how could it be? That can't be. That's not what I thought, you know? I had a friend say to me once, well, you talk about these conspiracies. Mm-hmm. How could these conspiracies possibly take place? I said, you know how the best place to hide a conspiracy? Behind an ego. Because most people think they're the smartest people in the world. No one wants to admit, and this was my biggest point, you know, when I hit this wall in 2001, where I just had to know how to rethink everything. I had to admit, I had to strip all the pride from myself, from my ego. I had to admit that I'm stupid. Someone actually was smarter than me and made me think that this is how the world works, and it just doesn't. We can't be that it works that way. And getting to that point is sometimes impossible. I used to be in the Rotary Club. I used to be the president of the Rotary Club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was part of that too for about 5 minutes, yeah.
Actually, I was for years. And I sat in a room with 50 guys who thought they were the 50th smartest people in the world. Men and women, that's just guys. I was in the Rotary Club when only men were allowed, but then women came in. You cannot tell people like that. You know what? The economy doesn't work the way you think it works. That money in your wallet isn't money. It's an IOU. It says it right there. Note. The legal term of a note is an IOU. It's not saying it's money. You're saying it's money.
The so-called smartest people, the people who are part of... Well, in a Rotary Club, you're going to see professionals, lawyers, doctors.
Right.
I think you're only allowed to have one of each profession
right.
or specialty
right.
in there.
Right.
But they're the most educated. But they're educated in what? The way the system works.
Exactly.
I work with professionals all the time. They're mm-hmm. rigid. They're entrenched in the system.
Right.
They really are not very creative in their thinking, and if you
right.
pull them out of the box for a second, mm-hmm. you get the deer in the headlight look.
Yeah, they're lost.
Yeah.
Yep. Upton Sinclair, the writer, said it, the perfect line he had. It's impossible to get a man to understand something when his livelihood depends on his not understanding it.
Exactly.
So if you are so entrenched in the system, you work on Wall Street, and someone like me comes along and says, but there is no money. You don't own any. You can't own it. That stuff in your wallet is an IOU. What are you kidding me? I bought a house with this. I said, no, you didn't. You're not. Look on the lease. It says you're the lease. On the deed, it says you're the leaser, not the owner of the house. I've bought and sold 2 houses in my life, paid them off. I was never listed as the owner on the deed. And then those deeds. Because you don't know, you can't own something. You can't buy something with a debt. If I owe you $1,000.
That's why they call it a mortgage. It's a dead measurement.
So you're dead.
Yeah.
If I owed you $1,000, you can't go and buy a Cuisinart at Macy's and say, look, I don't have any money, but Joe DeToma owes me $1,000, so we're going to transfer that debt to him. Macy's going to tell you, well, take a powder. You can't do that. You can't transfer one debt with another. But that's how our economy works. But you can't. But trying to get someone who works in the economy to agree with that, even though they know that that's how it works.
You take a dollar bill, and I've done this with people. You take the dollar bill and you show it to them and you say, what does this say? Mm-hmm. And it tells you basically that this instrument is, and I forget the verbiage on the dollar bill. That's terrible. I don't have one. I don't have my wallet.
It's a note, Federal Reserve note.
It's a debt note. You know, all debts, public and private, is the term that you have to focus on there. And they look at you and I go, all debts, public and private. What is that?
Right.
I said, go home and pull out your mortgage. If you lease, pull lease out. And understand that what you're dealing with here isn't equity. There is no value in this.
Right. Well, you have to think about the subtle genius in that. Because if you need to control people, like people are always talking about, we're going to have martial law, we're going to have martial law. They don't need martial law. They have money.
No, I'm not of the opinion that martial law is necessary at all. We're in cages walking
around. We're already in martial law.
Yeah,
we just don't
exactly.
know.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of dissonance again, you know. All you need is money. You can't exist in this country without money. You can't barter. They made that illegal a few years ago.
Made that illegal over 20 years ago. I watched my parents be prosecuted by IRS over a trade exchange. Yeah.
Right. Because you have to have money. So without it, you're going to have, you know, the big scare in us is, oh, God, I won't have health insurance. Oh, God, I won't have retirement. I won't have this. I won't have that.
Well, hell, you know? Obama will give you a cell phone now.
What's that?
Obama will give you a cell phone now.
Right. Yeah, because it's another way to be indebted to the state. And if you look at it, even if you look at libertarians, which I consider myself one, but if you look at Ron Paul, great guy, he says phenomenal things. I wish he would have won the election. Not that I think the president would have that much power if he did, if the powers that be don't want it to be. It's not going to be. You can look at Kennedy for that.
Right, right, yeah.
Kennedy tried to do away with money. He came up with
silver reserves.
Silver certificate money. Yeah. That shot in the head 3 months later.
Yep.
You know? Abraham Lincoln came up with greenbacks to pay for the Civil War. Boom, he got shot in the head. You know, it's a clear and a clearly set message. Don't mess with us or we're going to shoot you in the head. You know? It's just a way to be indebted. And once you're indebted, you don't need chains. Because if you have to earn money to buy food, because no one knows how to grow their own food anymore, and now with GMO and Monsanto's GMO food coming up, you won't be able to anyway. So you can't farm. You can't trade and barter.
Well, if you remember back in the 80s what happened, and they've been doing this for decades, the great debacle over all the farms that were taken over. I mean, those farms wound up being repossessed by banks who then turned around and sold them to Monsanto and ConAgra and all of the agribusinesses to turn over the soil into propagating the GMO crops that were part of this whole deal.
Right.
And unfortunately, Willie Nelson can't do enough concerts to turn that thing around.
Right, right. And that was the whole lead-up to this supposed movement of the Patriot Movement. That was all started by farmers.
Yes, yes.
For this very reason. They were losing their farms. They got together to find out a way to break the banks. When they started organizing into situations where they were powerful enough to maybe even come up with their own resources to break the bank, Waco, Texas was used as an example. Don't mess with us. We'll come over there and kill you and your kids. And they used it as an excuse that it was some kind of religious patriot music. Movement that was going to overthrow the government, and you know, and that's the message that was sent. That's why it happened. That, and we needed a blood sacrifice because it was a satanic holiday.
Always a blood sacrifice.
Right, it's a satanic holiday.
Yeah.
It was birthday. It's written down in the satanic calendar as a time to sacrifice children. The Murray Building, Waco. All happened around that time, April 20th. There were all children involved. So it's, that's the other part of it, is you have to think back and say, can a human be that devious? And that's what leads me down the path of, yes, we can be, But somebody's got to be teaching us how to be deceived. It's not in our nature to be deceived.
Part of what I've done in studying, and it's mostly been in recent years with these mass shooting events, tracking little details behind them, going back to the Virginia Tech shooting, the shooting of Gabriel Gifford in New Mexico.
Right.
These are just the big ones. There's a bunch in between. The Aurora, Colorado shooting going up to Sandy Hook. And when you begin to look at the details, if you look at lunar cycles, dates, times, numeric sequences, signatures of the killers themselves, names that come in to the narrative, you begin to notice creepy aspects of this. And quite honestly, when I was doing the Aurora, Colorado shooter, the Batman massacre, it was actually making me nauseous to deal with the details of what went into that. Because when you get to the point where we got last December with Sandy Hook, and you realize there's numerically no way all of this stuff is a coincidence.
Right.
Something else is going on. Are we back to the Archons now?
Yes. Because what happens when you research this, when I research these things, and I realize that perhaps there is a spiritual, be it a dark one, connection in here involved, one thing happens. The fear goes away. Because you start to realize, wait a minute, there is an that could be an explanation for this. There's an explanation, there's a way to resist it. And if that's the case, then these archonic entities have to crush you. Those are the most dangerous times in a person's life, spiritually and physically. Because those are the times when the attacks are going to occur. You're going to get sick. You're going to better watch where you go, because you might step at home and break your ankle. Something's going to happen to snap you back to their reality, which is supposedly our reality. Because you need to suffer. Because if you're not suffering, they aren't getting any energy from it. And if you can be aware, that's all you really need, and that's what these mystery schools teach, is not to be afraid of it, to be aware of it. Because if you're faced with this thing, even after death, when you're faced with maybe what would be the most horrible sight of your life, you're going to laugh at it and say, I knew you were coming.
Somebody in the chat room just brought this up. This is a great question. They said, if you think about it, could all the things we are seeing being orchestrated be for the purpose of waking people up? Now, that may not be their design, but when we go into, I guess what you would call causative good and evil, and probably the way the universe is attuned, there's a duality in everything, but it all serves one purpose. And you just nailed the essential element, the awareness. When you become aware, even though you look at an event like Aurora, Colorado, Sandy Hook, the Kennedy assassination, it really doesn't matter. You suddenly realize that there is evil, and the stark contrast of evil against good becomes the pivotal awareness that brings you to a place where you now move up another level.
Right.
You hit it with 9/11. I mean, I've been going through this for most of my life, and so have you. So have most of the people that are on the chat room or listening to this show.
Right.
They were vaguely aware of it, then they got a little more aware of it, and something in their life would kick it, and it would go up another level.
Right.
Well, on a collective basis right now, tell me what you think. Is humanity getting an escalated collective awareness that's now kind of coming home to roost?
Yes. And one of the reasons I think might be, that we're experiencing, we've moved through another age. You know, there are ages of 26,000 years, right? Solar ages, cyclical ages. That's when an age is. It's 26,000 years.
Right.
There was the age of Aquarius, and so on. You know what I mean?
Yes.
We've gone to another age, and in this age, for the next 26,000 years, we're lined up with the center of the Milky Way and the center of the universe. It's all in one line. This direct line happens, you know, rarely. There's 12 ages, one for every constellation, and 26,000 years between them. At this point, the light, the energy of the universe is on us. We can't help but be aware of it. We have a part of our brain called the pineal gland. If you see in ancient sculptures, it's shaped like there's always a symbol of an acorn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because that's what the pineal gland looks like, an acorn. The pineal gland secretes a chemical called DMZ. It's
a hallucinogenic. Okay, you know, this answers a question that was asked on the chat earlier, too, so go for it.
Okay. Now, see synchronicity again. So, our pineal glands hold this tiny little chemical. It is the chemical that releases upon our death. And scientists say that's our near-death experiences are when the pineal gland secretes this chemical. The ancients knew about it. The evil side of nature knew about it to the point where they would have human sacrifices and carve your pineal gland out of your brain while you were still alive to get the chemical from it. These were the Dionysius-type cults of the past.
Right, right.
It's important that we have that gland. It's important that we can communicate spiritually. But there's one thing that'll mess up your pineal gland. And that's fluoride.
Right.
What have we been putting in our water since the Nazis told us about fluoridation? It's fluoride. If you look at a pineal gland that has fluoridation contamination, calcium builds up over it. It encapsulates the pineal gland, therefore effectively blocking it off. Now, there's an ancient myth that the moon wasn't part of the earth. The moon was brought here. These are ancient cultures, and ancient cultures around the world, the Hopi Indians, the Aborigines, the ancient Greeks that preceded Plato and Aristotle, talked about the moon being brought to the earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Their belief in this moon being brought to the earth was to block that energy so we couldn't receive it. It would block that source of energy from the universe that we were directly getting without the moon being in the way. Because the moon is in the exact place it has to be for a solar eclipse, for a lunar eclipse. If the moon was back or forth just a little bit out of where the orbit is right now, there would never be a total solar eclipse. You couldn't have it.
Right, right, yeah.
That event... and among other events, David Icke talks about this. It was one of the most fascinating parts of his books, is how the moon is the exact size it has to be. It's in the exact position that it has to be in. It's one of the few planetary objects that doesn't rotate. We always see the same side of the moon. Scientists say it does actually rotate, but it rotates at such a speed that we don't notice it.
I just had a conversation last night with some friends of mine up in Canada who are Jewish people. They're not traditional Jewish people. They're not traditional Christians, but they are believing Hebrews who have been working for years on a project called Self-Defining Hebrew. And I was talking to my friend last night, and I asked him a question at some point in the narrative. I said, where in the creation in Genesis is the moon? And he said, it's not there.
Right.
And that was, you know, I just wanted his opinion. I've read it. But I wanted the opinion of somebody I knew also had some scholarship behind them. It's not there.
Right.
So even from a biblical standpoint, that moon was not part of the original creation.
Exactly. And like in these Aboriginal societies, anything earlier than 14,000 years ago have oral, because there's no written histories from them, of the moon not being there, the moon being brought to the earth and placed there. It's an artificial construct. We know that NASA even says the moon is hollow, because when they dropped the lunar module upon takeoff, when they were returning to Earth, when the astronauts returned to Earth, and they jettisoned the lunar module, and it landed on the moon. The moon echoed for 3 hours, and they could pick it up on the instruments that they left on the moon, as if it were hollow. Almost all the craters on the moon are almost exactly the same depth. It's almost like it was just put there, you know, painted on, hey, let's put this here. And, you know, it's almost like it was an artificial construct, this construct brought here. Maybe it's a spaceship. You know, people have been talking about, since when the invention of the telescope, people have been talking about seeing UFOs on the moon. You know, it's back to the time of Jules Verne. It's what inspired Jules Verne to write half of his things. You know, it's very interesting that all these ancient technologies that go past the point of 10,000 years ago, that seems to be the key point, is all of a sudden we had civilization. You know, we went from like Cro-Magnon man to living in cities and having abacuses and being able to build ships and trade back and forth. No one can explain it, how this happened so quickly. So it's an interesting point. But back to the pineal gland, I think that's how we'll wake up. Whoever can manage to decalcify the pineal gland or hasn't been contaminated with fluoride. You gotta laugh at that. That here's a chemical that we've known since the 1800s that fluoride was a carcinogen. And they made arrangements for it in Teddy Roosevelt's presidency to not contaminate our water.
It was also
putting it into water.
It was also a byproduct of aluminum manufacturing,
Or
as our British friends say, aluminium. Well, what ramped up kind of during World War II, but after it, you had this explosion of aluminum. Cookware, everything was made out of aluminum in the 50s.
Because that's the time when we brought Operation Paperclip for Nazis to the United States. And we started using their scientists instead of our own. And that occult pseudoscience has been running this country ever since. Why do we have to pay so much for oil when in Germany they're running 53% of their country's running on solar energy?
Well, why are we running on oil at all when 100 years ago we had Tesla out there who basically gave us the ability, and it was suppressed, and every major technology that's been what you would call free or zero point energy has been suppressed.
Right. You know what it is? It's this one's going to go bad. Sorry. You have that. You know why? Because you can't fight a war over solar energy. Everybody gets it for free. You know, it's the other part that cracks up. I had cancer a few years ago, and it was bad. It was stage 4, and the doctor told me if there was a stage 5, you had stage 5. So I refused the chemotherapy. So, hello? Okay, you got me?
Yeah, you're still...
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'll wait for a second.
I understand.
So I refused the chemotherapy tonight. I said, no, you know what? I'm not going to put poison into my body. I'll just fight it on my own. Take out the kidney that was cancerous, and we'll take it from that. Well, it's more than that, the kidney, but it was whatever they did. The next day, the next week when I finally got out of the hospital, I was like, you know, I got to get in the sun. And this was years ago, before I knew about vitamin D. And I just felt this need to be in the sun. Now I find out that vitamin D is the best carcinogen on the anti-carcinogen on the planet, and you get it from the sun.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
But what are they trying to do today? Today they tell you the sun is bad for you. You got to put sunblock on. You've got to buy vitamin. You got to have vitamin D. So why don't you buy it from us? We'll manufacture it for you. And instead of going standing in the sun and getting it for free, the way God intends you to. So. You know, everything is just such a facade. How people don't see through it is just amazing.
Well, and then we have the aerosol projects, solar chemtrails, which I believe partially it's a multi-headed hydra there. But part of it is solar dimming. I mean, you look at what happens when they fly over, and the sun rays coming into the Earth drop by about 40 to 45%.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about what we're talking about with blocking the energy from the universe, maybe since there's no way to reposition the moon without telling everybody it's there, because you got to remember, when everybody thinks that we just fly around each other in a circle. But at the same time that we're flying around, all the planets are flying around the sun in a circle, we're also moving in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got along in that straight line to the point where the light in the universe can hit us, there is no blocking it. The moon, nothing is going to be in our way. So now that that's happened, maybe they need to shield us from this. And maybe they've come up with a chemical concoction that will help to block out energy from the universe, you know?
Yeah, there's something going on there.
Yeah, remember, whatever we know, we didn't know in 50 or 100 years.
We're going to take a... Joe, you're kind of breaking up a little bit on your phone, too. I don't know if you're on a portable or...
I'm getting a beep. You know what? I'm going to hang this phone up and pick up my other phone. This phone might be going down.
That's good. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a break at this point.
Okay, great. I'm going to hang up and then I'll pick
it up. Okay, don't hang up. Keep one phone in one hand because I don't want to reconnect you.
Well, I'm trying to do that, but I don't think... Okay, I got it. Can you hear me now?
You're good. You're good. No, it's just easier to not hang up.
Yeah, I'm not getting you on the other phone.
Okay.
Okay.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a break here and we're going to come back. I'll just tell everybody now, Duncan O'Finian and Miranda Kelly will be here in the second hour. They'll join us online. Joe, get your phone straightened out. We're going to play some music and we'll be back in about 7 or 8 minutes. This is Off Planet Radio Live. We will be right back.
This is Off Planet Radio. Imagine that all the cultural myths of the ancient indigenous peoples around the world are true. From ancient Greece to the Hopi legends, these stories are all tied together with modern conspiracy theories in the fast-paced fictional novel, The Cult of the Black Sun by Joe DeToma. This entertaining book has been called a cross between Dan Brown and Ian Fleming. Read the connections between Nazis and UFOs and the American patriots trying to stop them. Buy it now at Amazon.com or your local bookstore.
Second hour of Off Planet Radio Live. I'm Randy Moggins. Everything sounds really, really strange. Not only that, but I've got cues running wild all over the place here. it's a new system. What can I say? We're basically in a new studio. There's a new setup, and I sound echoey. I don't know if that's coming across to you guys or not, but I feel like I'm in an echo tube tonight. So it's always interesting. We probably have to do some sound baffling in this room as well. Anyway, welcome back. It is the second hour of Planet Radio Live. It is the last show of February in the ever-evolving universe of the war for your mind. My guest, Joe DeTomo, is here with me. We're going to go about to the bottom of the hour with Joe, and then we're going to hopefully connect Duncan and Miranda, and we may take a brief break while we do that, because that's always a difficult situation. And Joe, welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yeah, we were having phone problems as well, so it was just a good time to take a break. We had some interesting conversations early on about Sandy Hook and some things that you brought in that have to do with that particular region up there. It connects as well to CIA operations, Black Covens, Catcher in the Rye, and J.D. Salinger. So let her rip.
Well, Newtown is about a half hour from here. This whole area is kind of an old, mysterious area. Rock woods, heavy woods, you know, almost surrounding. An interesting site is that there's a state park in Newtown called Satan's Kingdom State Park. Now, up until a few weeks ago, if you typed in Satan's Kingdom State Park, it came up Newtown, Connecticut. When I put that on my Facebook page and was going into some research with another author who I'm friends with on Facebook, all of a sudden it changed to West Hartford, Connecticut. Same page, you know, same how to get in touch if you wanted to spend the weekend at Satan's Kingdom, Satan Park. But instead of Newtown, Connecticut, it's now Hartford, Connecticut.
Wow. They redefined the geographic location?
Yeah. In other words, that's, well, you have to write to the office to make an appointment to go there. You're writing to Newtown, Connecticut. There's a Church of Satan called the Church of Tiamat, which is located in Newtown.
Lovely.
Tiamat is in Gnostic teachings. It's the destroyer of worlds. It's
supposedly
the planet or orb that crashed into the earth that gouged out the moon. That's what scientists would tell us, that the earth was hit by a planet-sized asteroid, and it dug out the Marianas Trench out of the Atlantic Ocean, and that became the moon. Except when other scientists started doing studies on it, they realized that the moon's bigger than that. The moon is actually bigger than it should be.
Yeah.
So they said that Tiamat turned around, came back, and hit the earth again. So teams of scientists kept that up, and that wasn't enough. So they said, turn around and came back and hit us three times, which is impossible. You know, it's like three buildings falling down from two airplanes. You know, what are the chances of that? But which, getting back to the moon, you know, possibly being an artificial ship of sorts. So the Church of Tiamat is located in Newtown. It's supposedly the recruitment center for the Church of Satan, which moved from San Francisco to the East Coast.
Wonderful. I feel so much better about that.
Now, J.D. Salinger lived not far from Newtown, between Greenwich and Westport, which is just south of Newtown. That's where he wrote Catcher in the Rye, which we know is the favorite book of MK Ultra assassins. Which brings up a funny story, because when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, we were talking about this. The New York Post ran a thing on page 6, which is their, you know, gossip column, about how Mark David Chapman, who was caught with a copy of The Catcher in the Rye, he was actually reading it when the police came to arrest him for shooting John Lennon. He said from his jail cell just this week, people will not know the significance of Catcher in the Rye. but it's there. And that's how it was left off. Who knows what else he said, but that's all mentioned in the article. But J.D. Salinger lives there. J.D. Salinger was, he went in and out of different religions. And J.D. Salinger, for a time, was a follower of Yogananda. Yogananda was the person.
I'm glad you got to say that, not me.
He came to the United States. He kind of helped introduce yoga way back in the early 1900s, 1910, 1920, and helped set up in that area a yoga center for studies, yoga studies. It wasn't only just what we say today, people bring their mat and go do exercises. It was a religion, basically. Adam Lanza and his mother lived on Yogananda Street, which I find fascinating.
I missed that detail.
Yeah. The street they lived on is called Yogananda Street. No one knows why that street is named Yogananda Street, except
This is part of the surreal stuff that riffs through all of this. It's like...
To me, it's the glue that says there's something that connects all this. How does that... How could that be, you know? Now, Yogananda was not a bad person. He wasn't a devil worshiper or anything. Yeah. Matter of fact, he had a lot of run-ins with a spiritual entity he identified as the devil. But it was Middle Eastern, you know, philosophy. And what sprung up around there was a Theosophical Society. I don't know if you know, the Theosophical Society was kind of like what Aleister Crowley based his religion on.
Right.
The Theosophical Society, Madame Blavatsky and Aleister Crowley, who was the head of, who was the reintroduction of the Church of Satan into modern society, was Aleister Crowley. And there was a Theosophical Society right there in that area. It's just very interesting how all these things tie together, you know? There's got to be an architect of sorts. Now, is that architect God? No. Why would God do that to us? But God did give us free will, and in a way, allowed Satan to be who Satan is. You know, there's no way to stop him without taking away our free will. So, rather than do that, we are free will. You want to go worship Satan and invent money and hold down your fellow man and go to war and do all these atrocities, well, you know, you have free will to do it, but you're going to pay for it. You're going to answer for it when it's time to face me. You're just going to spend that much more time having your soul cleaned before you're allowed to see me, you know?
Cosmic dry cleaning.
Right, cosmic dry cleaning. So you got to look at it and say, if God's not going to do that, and he's certainly not going to, who is? Well, who gets off on our suffering? The Archons. Who the Archons represent? Perhaps they're the dark angels that represent the legion loyal to Satan. And now, as I'm saying this, I got to just say one thing. And I know it sounds crazy. Everything I'm saying sounds crazy. But if you research it, it doesn't. But it doesn't sound so crazy anyway. But if you do research it, something's going to happen. You're going to face some kind of test. There's only one way I have ever found, and it's the way my grandmother taught me. My grandmother was a healer, a little old Italian lady, but she was one of those people that other people would come to have the evil eye removed from them, or if you were suffering from headaches, she would say certain prayers over you. And she taught me these prayers, and these prayers are for St. Michael, the Archangel. It's the only way to protect yourself. You can ask God to protect you, but God kind of doesn't interfere. Your protection has to... He'll protect you. If you really have to rely only on him, I think you'll have protection. But that's why the Archangel Michael is there. See, the Archangel Michael doesn't have any agreement with the devil. He doesn't like him, threw him into hell at one point, and would be glad to do it again. If you have to, and it's in Catholic exorcisms, that's who is invoked, is Michael the Archangel. That's the final invocation in an exorcism to make sure that it just doesn't happen again. And it's basically a very successful plea. So if you find yourself researching this and suddenly your family's treating you differently, you get migraine headaches you can't get rid of, some kind of something comes up, protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for protection. I know that sounds odd, and in today's day and age of new age type of philosophies, that sounds archaic, but it's the best way. Ask for help from Jesus. Ask for help from Michael the Archangel. You're going to need it, because it's hard to fight them. Because, you see, in this day and age, we've all taught ourselves that we don't need religion. And basically, religion has taught us we don't need religion. Because look at what's going on today in the Catholic Church. It's an abomination. So what is, how could that, why? Because...
But we're not really talking about religion, Joe. We're talking about spirituality.
When I'm talking about religion, yes. I'm talking about people standing together spiritually. That's a religion to me. If you stand alone and you listen to the New Age teachings of the Theosophical societies, they tell you, you don't need all this. You can stand alone. You can fight off whatever you have to fight off and make your own reality and all this other stuff, which is true to a point, but there's one point where they, the dark side, group together in that same Jungian mind-meld type of power, where there's a group of them against little old you, because you were told by some half-cocked New Ager that you could stand alone and without any help from anybody. Well, that's just not true. And it's that thinking is designed for our failure. It's designed so one person is standing against a legion of 10,000 who are thinking against them. But if you can put 10,000 like-minded spiritual people together to band together to protect themselves from 10,000 dark-sided legions, well, now it's an even fight. And the light's always going to win against the dark. So that's what I just wanted to say, is that because I found it, as I research it, I come under psych. I'll sit at the computer researching this and suddenly have a nosebleed. I never get nosebleeds. You know,
No. I look, I can tell you right now, there's intense energy going on with this show tonight. And some of the listeners are feeling it. I'm getting it. You're probably getting it.
Right.
Almost every time that we do something like this, there's like energy attacks that occur.
Right.
And it's, for me tonight, it's been like somebody hooked me up to a negative ground, because I feel drained.
Right.
And it's, so we have to push forward. And
I mean, that's the thing. And my phone went dead. My phone never dies. It didn't even send a charger all day. You know?
You're welcome. Welcome to the off-planet radio effect.
Right. So when you're talking about these things, you have to be distracted. They have to distract you. They have to bring you back to their reality, which is a reality of pain and suffering and money and gold and all this other bull that you have to survive, but you don't, you know? But they have to get you back there, and the best way is to hurt you. So if you find yourself researching this, and especially if you find yourself connecting with it, something's going to happen. And it might not even be physical. It might just be your family treats you different. Your friends are standoffish. You know, it's something like that's going to happen. I don't really fit in with any of the crowds I used to hang out with anymore, because they think I'm a wacko.
No, we do wind up becoming very isolated and alone. That's one of the common complaints with most people that have gone down this path. And it's part of why you look at the chat rooms tonight. People are searching to connect with other people. And they want to do it with like-minded people who have some sense for the truth. That's kind of what we do here. We're a catalyst and a springboard for people. And people yeah. like you who come to the table and bring your truth, contribute to that and begin to build it up, and we can't ignore the spiritual side of it. That's, right. you know, that's
it's
the
all part, about the spiritual side.
But that's the hardest part to put together because we're isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any nuggets of how to work through the isolation?
Well, I'm a complete believer in synchronicity. Wherever you are, you're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So make the best of it, because you're stuck in traffic, you're lost on a road somewhere. You're supposed to be there. There's a lesson someone wants to teach you. So find out that lesson. If it's a good lesson, that's great. If it's a bad lesson, go refer to page one, invoke some help from Jesus, from the Archangel Michael. Ask for protection. If you ask, you'll get it. If you don't ask, because we have free will, you think you could stand on your own, you're a tough guy, and you're going to stand against a bunch of beings you can't even see, well, then you're going to suffer consequences. Ask for help. Even if you think it's belittling yourself. That's what all this New Age philosophy, this humanistic religion that's sprung up, is about. It's about keeping us separate from each other. And that's when we're most vulnerable. So ask for help. And if you do, you'll connect. Somewhere along the line, you'll connect with other people. Facebook, you know, anything like that, where all of a sudden you'll see other people who think exactly like you. They're really friendly. And you build up a community of like-minded beings, you know, like-minded thinkers. And eventually that passes off. And don't kid yourself. There's a lot of people who think like us. They may not express it, and they may not get on a radio show and talk about it, but there's a lot of people who are starting to think about things like this. And once you break the ice, you make them more comfortable. But you got to have the cojones to do it. You know, you've got to just do it. Because if you don't, and you sit there in your little world, you're just going to be alone. And spiritually, you could be surrounded by people. I've been in rooms with 100 people and felt alone because I couldn't connect with any of them anymore, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's the thing, you know. Break the ice. Get out there and, you know, lay it out. Lay it to bear. If people laugh at you, they laugh at you. I look at David Icke. He's a perfect example. I mean, for 20 years, people treated David Icke like he was a friggin' moron, you know? He was saying things that people just couldn't believe, you know? Now, all of a sudden, a lot of the things he said came true, you know? All his research, all these naysayers, I listened to Jesse Ventura, who I lost a lot of respect for lately. But Jesse Ventura uses all of David Icke's research, but we'll get him on a TV show and try to put him down and denigrate him about research into reptilians. You know,
well, there's just this whole battle thing that's going on in alternative media right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm caught in it in some small way as well as everybody else because there's so much fragmentation right now.
Yeah. What I think it is a lot, but we're back to ego. Because
yeah, we are.
Everybody wants to be the guy, you know? They want to be the person with all the answers, you know? I'm still learning. I mean, as a plumber growing up, you know, people ask me, how did you get, you know, to be a good plumber? It's because they ask questions. I never assume I know anything. I could fix the same problem on a boiler a million times. If I come to your house and there's a problem, I'm going from step one till I get it fixed because I'm not assuming that it's going to be this. Because every time I assume, I'm wrong. So the thing is, don't have an ego because that's just, you know, asking for trouble. But everybody wants to be the guy. They want to be the guy with all the answers. You know, everybody has to come to me. I'm the guy with all the answers. You know? And nobody has all the answers. So if you can't learn something new every day, then you're doing something wrong. You should be able to learn something new every day. Keep an open mind and research, research, research. You know? But you get into a guy like, that's what I found with Jesse Ventura. Was I saw that show with David Icke that he had at the beginning of the year, and I was like, that's it for me, you know? I mean, his whole intention was, and if you look at it, Jesse Ventura's team, he has that woman, the black girl.
Yeah.
She has connections to the English royalty. She's in some kind of organization with them. So it's almost like they talk, because he talks to English royalty all the time. But you know what? David Icke was talking about child molestation and satanic ritual abuse in England 15 years ago when I read his book, The Biggest Secret. Well, it was 15, 20 years ago when I read The Biggest Secret. And he named Jimmy Savile as the person who's in charge of that. What happened just this past 6 months? Jimmy Savile's all over the BBC and the English papers as participating in satanic ritual abuse with children. 430 cases. So David Icke wasn't crazy.
No. And see, here's the problem. Nobody has all the truth, and everybody's fallible, and I have to remember that, you know, as well. A lot of times, yes, there's disinfo out there. There's all kinds of people that are attempting to massage and manage the information, and we have to be aware of them, but we also have to honor the good information that comes to us by different sources. Joe, I'm getting ready to bring Duncan and Miranda on. You're welcome to stay on the line with us, but tell people about your book and where they can get it and how they can contact you.
Okay. You can contact me on Facebook. It's Joe DiToma, D-I, capital T-O-M, as in Mary, A. The book, The Cult of the Black Sun, has its own page on Facebook, so you can leave a message there. You can message me on Facebook. You can find the book on Amazon. You can request it at your local bookstore. They'll find it for you. If you want, contact me. I'll get you out the book.
And there's links on the .net site right now where people are listening for Facebook and for Amazon.
Right. And it's the link on the bottom that says The Cult of the Black Sun. You have the one book, Black Sun Rising?
Well, that's actually what I called the show tonight. That was.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry, because there is a book, Black Sun Rising.
No. You see, the whole thing was reading your book and talking to you. Mm-hmm. I feel like right now the black sun is rising. And in the last couple of minutes here, is that what it feels like to you as well? I mean, really, things have gotten really dark, but at the same time, there is this kind of energy thing that's going on. So a lot of what you wrote in this book right now feels like all the birds have come home to roost.
Right. Well, what's funny is that when I wrote the book, I sent a copy to Duncan. And wrote back to me and said, did you write this book about me? If you read the book, there's a whole section about people battling the dark forces. And I said, well, no, but you think it's about you? We went back and forth, and there actually are a lot of similarities in the book. Actually, Duncan and I have a lot of similarities, so he's a plumber also.
That's right. Yep.
So, yeah, we have a lot of, you know, everybody thinks, how come plumbers are so wacky? And it's like, because you know why? And as a plumber, you cannot assume anything. Like I said before, when I go in people's houses, you can't assume. As a plumber, you have to use science. And in using science, sometimes you have to realize that there's also a spiritual side to science. And that's where we're at right now. We're at a dichotomy in our lifespan here where, yes, the darkness is rising, but there's also a light coming. And no one can actually figure it out, but everybody feels it, kind of, you know?
Yep, the energy is all there.
Yeah.
You know what, Joe, and you're going to stay on with us while we do the next segment as well, but I want to invite you to come back on again.
Sure.
I've enjoyed the conversation. You've made it really easy tonight, and a lot of information. The chat rooms, I can tell they're getting into it as well. We're going to take a brief break here and come back, and we're going to be joined by Duncan O'Finian and Miranda Kelly. Give us a couple of minutes here to get the calls patched in, and we'll do that when we come back on the other side of Off Planet Radio.
Satanic cults have run this world for thousands of years. Human sacrifices have fueled their power over an unwitting population. A hand-picked team of patriotic agents and their influential backers have pitted themselves against this new world order to protect our country and our planet from their evil intentions. In the novel, The Cult of the Black Sun by Joe DeToma, this struggle is told in the modern setting of present-day America. Buy it now at Amazon.com or your local bookstore.